Welcome to Valve-based Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language Valve-based Stuttgart fan podcast where reviews are unofficial, uninformed, usually unprepared. This is episode 111. My name is Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. You can reach us on Twitter at Valve-Americana. This is Rob's third episode in a row. Now, Rob, last week we talked about hat tricks. Is this like an American hat trick for you? What's going on?
I think it is, right? Three in a row has to be. I mean, that's the only way that makes sense, isn't it?
I didn't know if it was like a Wisconsin hat trick or that German.
No, that's, I think, three DUIs or something. No, in Wisconsin.
All right, let's do some shout outs. We got Valpe Bingo, Bundesliga Phil Bonney, one of the great announcers. He got 8 out of 25, so he did pretty good. Pod predictions, it's 4 wins and 5 losses for myself and Matt, so I'm hanging in there. The Valby Frauen didn't have anything going on this week. Remember, they don't play up again until March. Rob, I'm kind of excited because I think I know the answer to this. Our new shout out for this year is the Valby Shop. They just broke out a couple black beanies, but the thing that everybody was talking about was the
is it what I just clicked on my screen?
Yes, the retro white, black, and red Yakko Windbreaker. Now, the Windbreakers were big in the 80s.
Oh, it's early 90s too. This is my high school, like high school and middle school age. This brings back memories.
you pulled the 80-year-old plug on this one then?
Yes, born in the 80s for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're not sure what we're talking about, if you jump on the website, there's this hideous white, black, and red. I think poor Jamie Leveling is the one modeling this thing, but it is straight out of my early 1990s basketball warm-ups. We had run out in these things. It is definitely retro. So if you got 80 euro to spend, it was either that or a flannel, right?
Rob, right. Yeah. I'm just amazed it doesn't have Starter as the manufacturer.
Or Champion or something like
that. all he needs is a Trapper Keeper, and he is ready for early 90s high school.
I went to high school with that guy. Yeah. Former Valve Bears, Juan Pereira scored for Hansa in a 2-2 draw versus now struggling Hamburg. Luca Pfeiffer played 70 some minutes against us this weekend. That poor guy can't catch a break. I just saw that he has the worst efficiency in the Bundesliga. Tomas Castanares played 20 minutes in a win in the third league. They're moving up the table there. OFC Fantasy, Jens continues to lead the way. He beat Rory from Village Footy by 1 point. So they're only 30 points separate them. And Doug is in third place there. OFC Tippspiel, I forgot to play. I am in last place. Kai Guy won his fifth week in a row and now is only 4 behind Stefan. So there's a race at the top. Pod Beverages. Rob, I am having a Hofbrauhaus Hefeweizen today. I'm taking a break from my Kentucky bourbon 12%ers to do a little bit wild here. What is your podcast beverage of choice today?
I decided to make my coffee Irish. So I got a little Irish whiskey in the Americano that I made today this morning.
Sorry, this definitely contradicts.
It's actually delicious.
Yeah, this definitely contradicts our earlier anti-DUI stance right here.
So. I'm not driving anywhere today. Room ball is just down the road, and that's like 7 hours from now.
We're role models. That's true. Speaking of role models, the man of the match, Anton, got 45% of the vote. Rob, was he your man of the match for this particular one? Or
this is the first man of the match I don't think I actually voted in. I didn't actually do anything with this one. This is another one where I don't have. Nobody stands out to me. Anton, sure, the defense for holding, I can see that, but I don't have a real big standard here. It was just a dirty, good team win.
Well,
I don't have a standout.
That's why democracy's in trouble, folks. People like Well, let's jump into the match itself here. So we were traveling to Darmstadt. So third place was going to 18th place. We had 3 wins in our last 8 against these guys, but a lot of draws. We won 3-1 in the first half of the season, but we were down early on a Daxo own goal, but Enzo and Seru got us back into it. These guys haven't won since October. So they have been on the struggle bus. They had a minus 27 goal differential, but they had played Bayer Leverkusen pretty tough last week. I was feeling pretty confident, and I usually don't feel very confident. They didn't scare me, but we were playing them on the road. And playing those clubs who are fighting for existence on the road in stadiums and fields that are a little bit smaller than what we're used to playing. I thought we'd get a win, but I thought it would be a struggle. I didn't think it'd be as big of a struggle as it turned out. What about you?
I mean, my prediction was a little bit worse. I did 3-0, I believe, last week, right? So I thought it would be a little bit easier, but the red card changes everything, right?
Yeah.
When you go down a man, it becomes more of a, what can we hold on to what we have and maintain? And they did a good, decent job of that, plus getting the extra goal, right? So gritty as can be. I don't think I've seen that many cards in a VfB game this year, right? That's got to be the most in a game this year.
8 combined yellow cards, if you include the yellow red that Pascal got, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, this official was handing them out like candy. It was
even though, he was, it still didn't feel like the game was under control. It was a weird thing. Like, usually getting the yellows out and trying to dictate the game from a ref perspective is what you're trying to do there. You don't want it to get, you know, chippy and ugly, but it didn't help.
No, we were going to talk about this later. Let's talk about now. At the end of the first half, after Pascal got the red, the Stuttgart players and Honus were just irate. I thought Odakarazor was going to get a yellow for dissent for him going at the official. And then at the end of the match, it was the same thing. The players were going at each other for both teams, and he could have handed out a couple more yellows.
For sure. Minutes. Yeah.
Bill said that, and he was kind of keeping them in his pocket at that point. I was wondering if his day job, so he is a police officer in his regular job, I was wondering if that was playing out in this one, because he came out on fire. But you're right. There was no time where I thought this guy's got control of the match.
Yeah, it was just chippy all around. And, you know, part of that, I think, is a little bit of being in that relegation slot, right? You are fighting for survival, and things are tense no matter what. And it brings it to every single game. Every game starts to feel like that do or die playoff. Any points you can get are incredibly crucial.
Right.
Then you go one man up, and can we get a tie? Can we get a point out of this? I mean, we're well aware how important a single point can be at the bottom of the table. We've been there, right? Yeah. So it brings out that incredible fight in a relegation side of things. And there were points where they did pressure. I felt like they had chances, mm-hmm. You know? So yeah, it was rough. It was a rough game to watch from that side of things. It wasn't your typical, possession based style that we usually kind of game we have, but it shows that we can actually win a crap game, which is good, right? I'd like to see that finally. That's what makes a difference for the top of the table.
Yeah, I got two things from what you just said. Is the one of the guys who was really getting into it with the Darmstadt players at the end was a guy who didn't start the match. And I was kind of surprised, Enzo Milo. Now, when you start Dennis Undav and you start Seru Girassi, somebody's got to sit, right? And Honus has played with sitting Jamie Leveling. He's played with sitting Enzo. I went back and I looked at a few of the lineups, and those are the two guys that tend to get sacrificed, you know, for each other. So he sat Enzo, and Jamie's been playing really well of late, so it's tough. But Enzo just seems to make things run in the middle there. So I get it's hard to criticize a team that's winning as much as they are, but the only real lineup change that surprised me was seeing Enzo sit out. Alex Nubel is still hurt, so he's out. Silas wasn't there because of baby Silas. Congratulations to him.
Oh, is that why? I didn't realize that. That is cool.
Yeah, so he just had that. He was celebrating his firstborn. So okay. He was out. So I was a little surprised not to see Enzo. What about you?
Yeah, he definitely has that kind of flair and unlocking kind of potential that Leveling comes down the wing, similar to what, you know, Fury does without as much of the end product at times, right? I feel like they're very similar, just on opposite sides of the field with those two. But Mio seems to be willing to hold the ball, make that one-on-one run against somebody and unlock things. He does a really good job of that. So he definitely has his place there in the center of the pitch doing that, which I think he brings a little more than Leveling does. But so maybe there's something with fitness or practice levels, or who knows what, that makes Hunnis's decision what it is, right? It is surprising to me to see, but again, it's a problem I like.
100%. I was thinking about that watching some of these clubs that were playing Champions League in Europe this past week, of Dino Mavropanos, our old friend, who we'll talk about at the very end of the podcast. That's a teaser there. He's been playing a lot for their Europa games, but he hasn't been playing a lot for their actual Premier League games. But they have the depth to where they can sit a guy who would be a starter, you know, in the Bundesliga. So it is nice,
yep,
where you can let Jamie or Enzo sit for 60 to 70 minutes, or if it's a fan protest, for an hour and a half. And
then, yeah.
And then get out there a little bit. The second thing I want to touch on is what you said about how we played. So I kind of broke the game down into two halves, which is really bizarre because there's almost like there was three or four halves in this game. So the first 15 minutes, Stuttgart comes out. We get the Anton assist to Seyru. Both those guys are just playing lights out. It was awesome to see Seyru back in starting lineup. Darmstadt was giving us space to play. That first 15 minutes, even with the VAR goal that was overturned, it looked like we were going to roll. And then the second half, after the fan protest, we saw Stuttgart come out in their doldrums again. This has been a common theme. And it almost looked like Darmstadt used that break to go, okay, what we were doing isn't working. We have to physically just destroy and break down these guys. And it looked like Darmstadt adjusted almost like they had a pre-halftime halftime. And they could
it was a good 20 minutes of sitting around. So
right. And they could reassess and go, okay, we can't play open with these guys. We have to crush them as much as they can. And then from that point forward, the game completely shifted into where it was. I wouldn't say it was Darmstadt's advantage, but it was definitely more even, Steven, than it was the first 15 minutes.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely, you felt like, okay, we're going to get a goal. When's it going to come? It's inevitable. That kind of phase of the game in the beginning where you knew it was coming, and the goal itself came after an opportunity, and then it came back in again. Right. So they got basically two attempts at that corner, essentially, for Seru's goal, which the pop up and header off the inside of the bar for Seru, what a way to, come back and say, hey, I'm back, guys. Yep. With an absolutely wonderful, wonderful goal there. Mm-hmm. So then you have the protests, which we talked about them a little bit last week, right? They're interesting what's happening. And I love the fact that the ultras are coordinated, if you will, enough to have one of them do it. The home fans do it. They get it all cleaned up. The game gets started, and the way fans are like, our turn. Here's more delays, completely and totally emphasize the fact that both teams are doing this. They are both for it. Right.
Right.
And just one little protest note too. I don't know if you saw it. There was a couple posts in both the Discords, I think. And even in a non FOFP Discord, I'm on for hockey. Someone posted in our off topic soccer channel, the video of the Rostock game, I believe. It was two RC cars that they somehow got on the field. So there's RC cars running along the field with flares to interrupt the game for their protest. Way cooler than tennis balls and coins. But how do you get a full RC car into a game?
Well, it's a Freiburg match this morning. As we record this, it's Sunday. So Freiburg and Frankfurt played an amazing match this morning. They had remote radio-controlled airplanes that were there. So, it is just going, and this actually goes to, it's becoming actually more tangible. So as we record this, Bochum has just gone up 3-1.
That's why I'm holding my phone watching. That's Fat Mob on my phone. I'm looking at the table
here. Same thing, right? Bayern. And Kevin Stöger of Stuttgart, pass, scored the penalty after an Asano opener from Stuttgart. The thing that, here's my theory, is that these breaks are giving the underdogs an advantage because they get 10, 15 minutes to kind of feel out exactly how their opponent's going to play. And they can realize, okay, here's what's not working and here's what we have to shift. And I think in so many of these matches, that's what you're seeing, is that the better team is struggling to get back into the match. We saw it yesterday with the Stuttgart-Darmstadt match. We've seen it actually with almost every Stuttgart match. We're seeing it right now as we record this with the Bochum-Bayern match. I want to be careful because I do support the fan protests, but the fan protests are definitely having a tangible impact on the performances on the pitch. I don't think you can say otherwise at this point.
Yeah. I mean, you look at something as simple as like the momentum, graph from FotMob, right? It kind of gives you a way to kind of tie those together. And it certainly seems like that is what happens, right? You go in and we're dominating, we score, and then it flatlines. I mean, it's hard to see on the video, but there's that big giant, the Stuttgart was dominating the game completely, then the momentum is flat. There is no momentum going either way. So it does certainly cause a breakup in that rhythm. Why the lower team, the underdog team, seems to be the one that comes out of it with an advantage, I don't know. I don't really understand that dynamic yet, right? No. You'd think that both teams would be able to make adjustments. Maybe it's an unwillingness by the upper team to change, right? We'll play our game because we dictate our game to the other team, Whereas the other underdog team is like, well, we need to change. We'll make a difference in what we're doing strategy wise,
right?
And we'll change it up. So maybe that's kind of where it comes from. But it definitely does seem to have that effect on the upper team, if you will.
Yeah, it's definitely
clear as hell in our first game, right? So it goes funk on there.
Yeah, it's definitely where the nice thing is, it seems like we were at least able to recover. So let's get into the second half of that. So Pascal gets the red card. So he is out at the end of the first half, which took 70 some minutes. And Johannes has to make an adjustment. So he sits Jamie Leveling. He brings in Josh Evangmon, who's more of a defensive player. We started to sit much more deep. We played much more counterattack because we're a man down. We stopped counter-pressing that point. Enzo came in a little bit later. Even though he's a slider player, he's a physical dude. He's not just an offensive dude. He's got
he likes to tangle.
Oh, he does. And so I do want to talk about the tactic shift and the you mentioned it earlier, the playing pretty versus playing gritty. I love that this team and this management can make that shift, because this is a criticism we had of these guys the last few years, that they wanted to play pretty football. And when they were given the opportunity to do that, they generally played really well. But when they played against grittier teams, I think Phil Bonney said it, is in the last 9 games Stuttgart has played against promoted teams, we were 8-1 win and 8 losses.
Ouch.
Those teams tend to play much more gritty. So the thing that I want to talk about here is good on Honus, to use one of Matt's phrases, to be able to recognize what wasn't working after halftime and be like, all right, guys, buckle in for 45 minutes of just defensive play at this point.
Yep. Yeah. And it definitely, we were the ones parking the bus for a change there for a bit, right? We were the ones on our back foot for a decent amount, which is the exact opposite of what we've seen in the majority of games. So that, I think a big part of that is the red card, right? You can't continue to dictate once you're down a person. That is a huge part of what makes that change have to happen. And like you said, good on Honus for actually, okay, I'm not going to stubborn-headedly say we're going to continue to play possession-based. We're going to, you know, drop back a little bit. The Fagnemann sub is perfect, right? Leveling isn't known for playing back defensively, but Fagnemann can play back there as a defensive back, or he can play up on the wing moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
That flexibility to be on the bench to bring somebody in that can play two ways like that to replace an offensive player, another just happy, happy place we're in, right? We have the lineup and the guys on the bench that can bring that flexibility finally. You have someone that can replace a couple of different positions and fits right in to what you need to do in a game like yesterday's game.
Right. So Honus being able to pull that out of his arsenal and put him in a guy like that.
I like that.
I was going to go with the arrow and quiver thing, but I decided to go arsenal that one. So for Honus to be able to do that, I mean, it all ended good for the good guys in this one. I mean, at some point we went up 2-0. Fabian Bredel looked good. Anton had a goal line clearance. Hiroki Ito was playing well. Ada played well. These guys were playing the time wasting game that you and I usually hate, but they were playing it to perfection.
Well, I am amazed Bredlow doesn't have a card for this game. How, of all the cards that guy, the ref gave out, does he not card Bredlow for extra time on every single opportunity he has to waste time?
Yeah, he was becoming a professional at it. And the spirits were good. So this was a much more celebrated victory than it was the last two. And because I think they were down a man, Anton said it after the match, is like, we had to run for one extra guy. This was a win that usually we don't get, right? This is a win that usually ends up a 1-1. You know, we get a point out of it, but this isn't a 3-point result here. So the thing that was cool too is Wu Yang came in and he looked really good when he came in. Enzo came in and he looked really good. Mahoud Dahoud scored the game, what turned out to be winner in this one. And I don't know if you saw this during the game or later on Twitter, Jamie, Dennis, and Sabre were singing on the bench with the traveling support. So
no, I did. I missed that. I'll have to go dig that up then for sure.
This is fantastic. So what happened? I asked a couple folks on the Valpy Reddit, give them a read if you're not familiar with it. But I asked a couple people, hey, what was those guys singing there? And so what they were singing was the traveling support was singing a song that loosely translated says that after all this shit, we're going on a trip, Stuttgart International, Euro Pokal, singing it over and over again.
And knock Dennis, on the Scheiße of again off on Reise. Yeah.
And Phil Bonney was like, well, I can't really repeat it home.
Right. That's I absolutely love when on the English broadcast you can clearly hear profanity in German, and the broadcast guy will just kind of glaze over it and ignore it. But there are times when you can very clearly hear the fans singing something that does have some profanity in it, or there'll be a sign that has some profanity in it, and they just ignore it. Whereas if you put any like of that type of language up on English, in English, it would be, you know, blurred out or cut away from immediately, and there's just a giant Scheiße up in a banner somewhere that you see for a whole segment, right? But yeah, I love that song. It's absolutely fantastic and absolutely on point.
Well, so let's dive in. So everybody was in really good spirits. They were really celebrating. It still was kind of chippy at the end of the match, but it was a big match for Darmstadt, but it was a big match for us too. And we'll talk about this in a minute, but we've got this schedule that can really set us up for a top five, maybe top four position. So I want to get your comments on this. The fact that these guys had each other's backs when things were getting chippy, the reaction to the new guy, Mahmoud's goal, the reaction on the bench when those guys were singing, the reaction after the match, when this was the first time, really since Daxo's injury, that the guys were fist pumping, excited, just jumping up and down with the win. So it really clearly meant something to them.
Well, the goal celebration when Dahoud scored, I mean, how many people off the bench came out there, right? I mean, it was everybody sprinted out. It wasn't just the guys on the field. It was all the guys in the warm-up jackets too, right? So, yeah.
Out there with his iced up hand.
Right. So it does really feel like the team is coming together. I mean, it's amazing what winning will do for a team, right? Mm-hmm. You are having success. It breeds success and happiness in the locker room. And things just start to fall in place finally. It's awesome to see the team that happy, that celebrated. And then going over to the fans, you know, we talked about last week that it felt a little bit, you know, they were there, they were doing what they were doing with the fans and doing their lip service, if you will, at that one. It felt like a little bit, this one, it felt like actually celebrating together with the fans. You know, it was a deserved win. Everybody knows it was a deserved win, and everybody's incredibly happy about it. So, you know, winning makes people happy.
You know what? Yeah,
weird.
Yeah, who knew this thought and this feeling that we're going through? So let's go through the final thoughts, the final feelings here. So the big takeaway that I got was this team can play pretty. It can play, you know, ugly, gritty. We're in third place still. I mean, that's what's just bonkers. Let's look at the upcoming schedule. We've got 6 ugly but beautiful points in our last 2 matches, Rob, versus Mainz and Darmstadt, 2 struggling clubs. We've got Cologne coming up, who just lost a tough one to Bremen. We've got Wolfsburg, who I can't figure out. They had a late draw to Dortmund. We've got Union Berlin, who won at Hoffenheim, and Pellegrino, old friend Matarazzo, is on life support coaching there. Then we've got Hoffenheim, who haven't won in 8 matches, only twice in their last 13. Then we wrap up with Heidenheim at home. I mean, that's our February and March. We talked about it last episode. I mean, we're third place on the table. You can look at the points, everybody who's listening to this, but we are starting to open up a bit of a gap. I mean, we talked about it last week. We're talking about it again this week. How good can this team finish this season in your mind?
I still think, and I'll echo what I said last week, we should be in a Champions League spot at this point, I think, toward the end of the year. It's still bizarre and crazy for me to say it, but I don't see any reason why not. We're winning the games we're supposed to win against lower table teams that we typically have struggled with when we've got ourselves in a good position like this. And we're sticking with the exception, I think, of the, you know, the Bayern match, I feel like we've stepped with the teams near us as well, right? You know, you look at the Pokal match where it was neck and neck with Leverkusen and only decided in the last minute, right? So we're in a good spot for where we need to be to finish the season out strong and stay in a Champions League spot and, you know, go on that trip next year.
Yeah, so if you look at it right now, we've got 46 points, which is just bizarre. Then Dortmund's got 41, and then 5th place, which, depending on how the coefficient goes, although it would help if stupid Bayern, stupid Leipzig would win in their Champions League matches. They both lost this week. They've got 40 points, and then 6th place is Frankfurt at 33 points. So pretty big gap there. The thing I want to touch on really quickly is the Honus trend, because he definitely seems to be the reason, you know, for the season. Since he's been here, it's been a lot of just winning. So his last season at Hoffenheim, so at the 22nd match day, Hoffenheim was in 5th place. And then the last 9 games, they went 0-3-6 and dropped to ninth place. I know. I don't know why I'm bringing this up other than to be a huge downer right now. But the only, I mean, that was, they expected to go to Europa that year and it didn't work out. So that's why he got canned from there. But after the match against Bochum, Thomas Tuchel may be in trouble. And so who knows if Honus's name gets called, because I think he's got a relative who plays out of Bayern. So real quick.
Gross.
We've all got
that storyline's horrible.
I know. We've all got faith in Sebastian. That trend he had with Hoffenheim, that's the outlier, right?
I got to hope so. I mean, it would be frustrating to suddenly have the tables turn so much. I don't see that happening, though. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing that scares me is exactly what you just hit on, though. Us getting poached for Bayern, by Bayern, or by somebody else, and watching the team get torn apart. With all the contract extensions we've seen, though, over the last month, maybe we're finally starting to be a place where people want to stay, though, mm-hmm. instead. I know the team needs to balance the book by selling, you know, folks that they brought on at a certain number, and that's one of the ways we finance things. I fully understand and get that. But if we can keep a relatively decent core of the team together, keep Honus around for a while, and continue to actually build season to season to season, rather than just this whiplash back and forth of plays really well, sells everybody, bombs.
Yep.
Let's get some stability in there. Make small changes, not wholesale changes for what's going on instead. It would be a much, much better place to be in. And I hope that's where we're trending toward.
Yeah, that's something that you've been hammering on really since I've known you. It's just keep some of the core guys together. Just see if you can have some consistency here. I think there's two things that are helping us. One is if we are able to finish in a Champions League spot, that's going to get motivation for a lot of those guys to stick around, because they will be playing those 8 games internationally and they'll be getting that attention. The second thing is with the Euros right around that schedule, they're going to be wanting playing for a team that's going to let them start so they can show their international coaches that, hey, I can play. So I really am optimistic that things, knock on wood, can stay good for at least another full year from where we're at now. Because I think with the Euros and with the potential of Champions League, there's a lot of motivation for guys to keep wearing the Bruce ring.
Yeah, well, the Euros are a really good example like that, right? Fury got his first call-up this year, but what if we see Anton and Undav also get their call-ups, and it's not just, you know, Bayern players playing for Germany for a change, right? And we get several Stuttgart players in there in the lineup on a regular basis as well that maybe want to stay and want to be there as a part of what's going on. Be wonderful to see it. Undav obviously has only been here for a year, and there's talk of how expensive his buyout is going to be because of the fact that, well, he's playing like a beast right now, right? he's certainly writing his own resume, and he's raising his own price every single time he puts one in net. Mm-hmm. So does he stay? Does he not? Does Chirassi stay? Does he not? All these questions are ones that I just want to push off to the end of the year and then deal with then. We've got the second half of the year to enjoy it. Let's enjoy it for what it is.
100%. I'm like an ostrich with my head in the sand. Just
exactly. Enjoying what's going
on now. You brought up a great segue, questions. Let's jump into part 3, news, headlines, and questions. All right, Rob. So here we go. We got a couple things. So Jovan Milosevic was loaned to our sister club, St. Gallen. He scored in the first 5-6 minutes, and then he hurt his ankle. So hopefully that's not going to be too bad for him, but it didn't sound very good.
Yeah,
Dennis Undav complained of some thigh issues for the third game in a row. So we'll find out tomorrow, which is Monday, what the situation is with that. We continue to have the DFL protests. Now some players and coaches are starting to speak out against it. Old friend Alexander Zorniger was the most vocal about how this is just ruining, you know, game day. But Dortmund came out and spoke out against it. And then Hoffenheim came out and spoke out against it. And everybody's like, you're Hoffenheim, shut up.
Yeah.
The last one was poor Sasha Kalajic, old friend Sasha. I was watching the match Sunday. He just random non-contact injury. Looks like, we'll find out for sure later today or tomorrow, his ACL on his right knee blew out again. Any of those 4 stories you want to?
Sasha hurts. Poor bugger. Yeah. Goes to England, immediately hurts himself, comes back to Germany and again hurts himself. It's frustrating style of career to have for any kind of player, especially one that has such promise and was just one of a fan favorites when he was here, right? Everybody loved. There we go. Bayern just went final, at least on my other screen. 3-2, they lost.
Wow. Okay. Thomas Tuchel watch. Now we're stuck.
But yeah, for Sasha, it's just rough to watch what he's gone through, especially with how good he, I think, can be if he stays healthy. That's frustrating.
I feel for the guy. We got some questions here. Tim, ShootMeFan75 says, what a rough game. Fouls on top of fouls. Ill temper from both teams. Played a smart second half, being down a man. I mean, I agree with Tim. The comment here that I would take away is just the flexibility of this group to play mentally gritty and also play pretty. It's Flabby Viking, a friend of the show, put on Twitter, the true grit meme. It's true. I mean, these guys, I really thought this match was a match made for Dan Axel Zagel, because he would have just cleaned up those long balls. And anytime any of those guys would have tried to get into anybody's face, I mean, here's a 6'6 dude who's going to push you down. So, I mean, we've talked about it before, talking about it again. I mean, I think Tim's right. It was a rough game, but we played a smart game.
Yeah, for sure. Even with the massive amount of yellow cards and getting one red, it felt like it could have been worse from that perspective, right? There could have been more cards. Mio certainly, with the way he was coming up and getting in people's faces, could have gotten more, right? So it was good to see them actually stick it out and not get overly frustrated, even though things were starting to boil over, right? It didn't get too far, right? Yeah. We had bench cards, at least several bench cards, right? So that always means things are getting spicy when you're getting players or people other than the coaches getting cards on the bench, right? So love to see the fact that we're able to stick it out, get through something like that, and come away with not just a tie or a frustrating loss, but actually the full three on it, which makes a difference, right? That's what's going to make sure we're in the right spot come the end of the year.
Yeah, it was a huge, it's just bizarre because it was huge for Darmstadt for obvious reasons, but it's becoming huge for us. If we want to stay in that top 4 or 5 spot, and I really think the guys do, we're past the point of safety at this point.
Yeah, one of the things I've said several times is like, I want to be that mid-table club that doesn't care at the end of the year because we don't have to care. Mm-hmm. But I was taking that from the perspective of not being in a relegation slot or a demotion slot. We've decided to whiplash ourselves far enough forward in the let's develop the club in a better way, scheme that we may have to care at the end and beat the crap out of somebody that is in that bad spot because we want to stay where we are in terms of, European positions.
It is bizarre. I've mentioned this before about looking at the
way top. To be stressful in the other way.
Stricker. I know. We can't be happy no matter what we do ever here. Mick Chaos asks, are we better with a 2-striker or single striker formation? I find this a really interesting question because Dennis and Seiru do play well together. There was a moment in the first half where there was a really kind of cute play they tried to do when it would have been better. I forget which one.
You're reading my mind. Seiru drops a ball to Undav. I'm almost positive.
Yep. And just like shoot it. Yep. So I think that's the thing that's kind of scary, though, is that I think there's still room for improvement in that relationship.
I agree. Yeah. When you get to see forwards start to be less selfish and wanting to play cute and do things like that, the confidence level is obviously there, right? They're not rushing to get a shot or looking straight at net only. That's a spot as someone playing in that position. You know that they are comfortable with what they are. They're not worried that this is going to be the only opportunity they get in the game and they have to force it and rush it. They are able to actually create and make things look pretty. You watch any of the top table teams and that's what their forwards are doing. They're pinging the ball around the box and actually getting an easy tap in or something absurd skill-wise because they're confident enough in what they're doing. They're not just quickly turning on net and firing a shot or blindly firing a shot in some way. You don't get those fancy, happy goals that way unless you have somebody that's confident in what they're doing and is happy with who they're playing with. And Seiru and Undav seem to be playing off each other really, really well. I don't know if we get the opportunity to watch them do this next year, but I am looking forward to watching it for the rest of the year. I would much rather see two strikers up front doing things rather than dropping, you know, somebody back and having to play that way more defensively. We have the opportunity now to have those two guys up front play together. Let's do it. Let's watch it. Let's enjoy it. You know, the front of the pitch is where I prefer to play myself too when I play, right? So I love the fact that I'm getting to watch what these guys are doing. The hold up play that you see from both of them, the little tiny drop offs or the wall passes where, you know, you got one guy overlapping somebody else. That's the fun side to me. Sure, a good defensive play is what it is, you know, but I don't, that's not what interests me as much as someone watching. I love the way those two are playing together. Please let them play together as much as possible as we can before it has to, you know, the sad, sad song of the breakup has to happen in the summer that we all know might be coming.
Yeah. Ostrich head in the sand. Let's just,
correct. Yeah.
I do want, before we go on to the next question, I do want to see what some of you just said is that I think through the neutral observer eye test, you're like, yeah, the team in white and blue should have won that game. And if you look at the XG, they had a higher XG.
Yeah. I was surprised by that one at the end.
This match, I think this is why this team is turning the corner, is because in years past, we're the team in white and blue. And that's the result. We played better. We deserved to win. But at the end of the day, you're going home with 0 points. And I think that's where this team has really turned the corner, where they can play bad, but still play smart enough to get the win and get the 3 points. And that goes to a question Kai here asks, is fourth in the Bundesliga, absolute madness. Is this a dream? Once again, the worst performance of the season, but this time about be one. If we win bad games now, nothing can stop us on the way to the Champions League. Darmstadt is now on the list of my least favorite teams with Union and Leipzig. So I want to get your take on this. Is who is one of your least favorite teams in the Bundesliga? I've asked Matt this. He hates Union Berlin. I'm not a big fan of Hoffenheim. What's your, you know, Schadenfreude team where you're like, yes, they're losing?
I don't want to say the obvious, but we just did celebrate the fact that Bayern lost a couple of minutes ago. But that honestly is more around the position they're in right now and where we're sitting with them in the table. I don't have the Yankees, Red Sox, raw hatred of Bayern like you see a lot, right? I don't know if I have a raw hatred of a team. I really don't like the way Union plays. I'm all about that. I love their story, and if I was a fan of them, I would like them. But I think it's similar to, you know, like other teams that like maybe like hate the Raiders or something like that, right? Because they play dirty, they play rough, whatever. If they're your team, it's great. But if they're not your team, it's a bit annoying and frustrating. But their story to be the, you know, Berlin team at this point is fantastic. So, yeah, I don't like the way they play. I don't like the way that they've done things. So maybe Union, that's work for me too.
And all I heard out of that is Rob is just a cuddly teddy bear who loves. So that's what you got out of that one. Tim wraps this one up. If Valby doesn't get at least 8 points on next four games, I will be disappointed. One of those matches is at home against Cologne that we're going to talk about next. Rob, what do you say? Let's take a break and then we'll jump into some predictions.
Sounds good.
Okay, we are back. Part 4, odds and predictions. So we are heading back to the friendly home confines of MHP Arena, where we're playing a struggling Cologne side. So we got third place, Rob, hosting 16th place. These poor guys are averaging 0.7 goals per match. They've only scored 15 total all year long. They've stabilized a little bit with their new coach, one win and three draws in their last six, and their defense has gotten a little bit more steady. But they're struggling mightily. They're one of the traditional clubs in the Bundesliga. You know, we ask this every time we have a team coming up. What do you think of this club? When you hear the Billy Goats are coming to town, it's hard to root against these guys.
Yeah, Cologne is actually one of the cities in Germany I spent a little bit of time in. It would have been my second time that I lived over there was an exchange student. So I actually went up to Cologne and met a guy that I did online video gaming with quite a bit, was a good buddy. And he walked me around, big Cologne fan. He actually lives in the States now. So I've actually seen the arena that Cologne plays at and have had a good time in Cologne. So Cologne's a fun city. They kind of are one of those clubs that have like a little small piece of my heart. It hurts me to see them, you know, down that low, struggling as much as they are. But if they do have that divide between 15th and 16th is getting bigger and bigger with each week, right? Mm-hmm. Those teams down on the bottom really need to change soon, or they are not going to be able to dig themselves out of the hole they're in. So I hope it's similar. You know, it's our last of three against the bottom, right? So I hope that they're able to dig themselves out, but I hope it it waits a week to start.
Yeah, one of the things that really hurt these guys was the transfer ban that took place. And I'm not going to get into the whole details of it because it's a Stuttgart podcast, not a Cologne podcast. But for reasons of legality, they were unable to bring in new players this particular season, which really kind of hamstrung what they were able to do. This actually brought up a question that I forgot to ask last segment, but I do want to bring it up because it comes from a friend, you know, of the show, Flabby Viking. They weren't able to make any signings, but we were able to make a few pretty significant signings. And Flabby asks, of all the signings that Fabian Vogelmuth has made, I'm kind of putting you on the spot, Rob, who do you think was one of his better ones? Because you've got, I don't think Seiru counts. I think Seiru was technically a Sven signing, but you do have Dennis Undav. You do have Alex Neubel. You do have, well, Mahmoud Dahoud is recent there.
Is Mittelstadt included in that section as well? Like, he's got to be as well, right?
Mittelstadt is a Vogelmuth signing, yeah.
Yeah, so that's really tough to choose between that group. If I have to make a choice just in terms of pure impact, Seiru and Undav kind of split the offensive impact a bit, right? So I'm not going to go with Undav because of that, and I'll go with Mittelstadt. I think he definitely, of that group, has made the most impact. I mean, the expectations for him were nowhere near what he's come in and done, and now look at him. He's a two-time goal scorer in the Bundesliga from that back defensive line. And not only that, I mean, that second goal of his, that little chip, cheeky goodness. I mean, that's wonderful to watch, right?
So, and there's talk of him being possibly on the national team, which isn't just Homer talk from people wearing the Bruce ring. There's actual talk in Germany of him going on that left back side, which is crazy because when we got this guy, I was not impressed at all. I think he's the easy answer there. I'm going to go with Alex Neubel, I think, just because he was really solidified. And even though Fabian Bredlow has done a bang-up job at the back, like you and I talked about last episode, I just, the way that Alex starts the offense, I think, is just so important to what we do. So, Flabby, I'm going to go with Alex, though. That's just to be a contrarian. I think Max.
No, I think they're both very valid answers. I mean, you can answer any of them. They've all been good so far. I mean, who's come in? If you look at this, the opposite direction, who's come in that hasn't been successful so far with his signings?
I think Jimmy Leveling was the one guy who you're like, yeah, when's this guy going to pan out? But then ever since we talked to Derek Ray, this guy's panned out. He's played really well. So yeah. I think, you know, Dennis has played great. Jamie's played really well. Maxi Mittelstadt's played well. Alex Neubel's played well. Angelo Stiller. We didn't even bring up Angelo Stiller.
Oh, yeah. So many. It's an embarrassment of riches style situation, right?
I mean, yeah, I know. If I'm Jeff, who's on this podcast, the Cologne supporter, I actually asked him, I was like, hey, do you want to pop on in place of Rob and give the prediction for next week? He's like, no, I don't. My club's terrible. So we're talking about this embarrassment of riches. And the only thing they've got is that deal kid who looks really good, who it looked like we were about to sign him to a free deal after this season. But word got out how good this kid is. And so now that's been on the back burner a little bit.
Yeah, I'm just looking here to see who the other arrivals are that would have come in. Ruo, I don't know if he's a part of,
him and Sturgio, yeah.
Yeah, both of those two guys. Ruo has been incredibly successful as well in what he's doing and in the role he's been asked to play. I don't know if he is – do we have an option to buy him or not? I'm honestly not sure. He's a loanee as well, right?
I'm pretty sure all the guys we have on loan have options to buy but for – Alex Neubel. He's the outlier.
Yeah. So looking at that list, yeah, Stiller's in there too. I mean, what a successful set of arrivals this year. Holy cow.
Yeah. So I don't know. Sorry, Cologne, if you're listening to this, we just talked about how you can't bring in anybody and we're bringing in the entire world there, but yeah, it's been a tough go for those guys. We've got 10 wins in our last 21 against these guys. We got 6 draws. We won 2-0 in September. Undav had the double where he really kind of had his coming out party. We've got 4 wins in the last 5, including probably the most famous one, which is the Legendo one, match day 34 a couple years back. I like to ask this question, odds and predictions. So what do you think the odds makers, you know, since we are sponsored by Winamax, have this one at? And then what do you think the final score of this one's going to be?
Oh, we've got to be favorites, I'd imagine. I mean, I can't believe that we wouldn't be. And you know my pure ignorance of these things, right? So there's probably some website you can easily look at this at, but I don't know. I'm gonna go with we're up by maybe a goal and a half on this one.
Ignorance, my friend, you need to go to Vegas right now. You nailed it. It's Stuttgart minus a goal and a half. The over-under is 3, so they think this is going to be a bit of a high-scoring one here. Jeff's thoughts are, when I told him this prediction spread from Vegas, he's like, I will bet my house on it right now because he's not going to buy that at all. What do you think the final score of this one's going to be?
Yeah, a little bit higher scoring. You know, we keep out of the red card trouble and don't have to shell back a little bit. And you know, maybe we'll go with I'll call for 3 goals again, but Colton gets 1, so 3-1. We can't do clean sheets. That's the one thing that Stuttgart doesn't seem to be able to do this year is hold a clean sheet. I don't think we have one, do we?
Boy, I don't think we don't have one in the new year. I know that. I'm not sure how far back we'd have to go into 2023.
I'm looking at fixtures and results here to see where the Freiburg match was a clean sheet.
Oh, how quickly we forget.
No, well, we've clean sheeted Augsburg, so right. They're Augsburg and Bremen. So there's been a couple, but it feels like in games where we just give up something simple and easy. Mm-hmm. You know, yesterday was a good example of that, right?
Yeah,
you let in one goal where you in a game where you maybe shouldn't. Mainz, maybe we shouldn't let that goal up. Later in the match either, right? Can't close out things. Get a little bit too relaxed at the end in terms of closing games out. So, you know, I don't think we'll have a clean sheet. Colton will score 1. They'll go up first to give us a little scare and we'll come back.
Oh, all right. Well, I think we're going to blow the doors off this one. I think it's going to be a 3-0 win for the good guys here. This Cologne can't score. I've watched a lot of their matches.
I haven't watched any, so.
Yeah, they're kind of my second club. They can't do anything in the final third. Now, they'll beat us 5-0 after I just said that, but they can't do anything in that final part there. They do have that deal kid who does look, you know, like the wait for it real deal, but he's still kind of working his way into it. The question for us is going to be, is Alex going to be able to play, or is it going to be a Fabian again? Is Anthony Rouleau going to come back from his broken nose and be able to play for Pascal, who's going to be out because of the red card? I would imagine Dennis Undav is going to sit for at least the first 60 to 70 minutes with that hamstring issue.
I think if Siru is starting and back, you know, that we can comfortably sit Undav if his hamstring or whatever he had wrapped is the problem. Okay. Or maybe it's just, you know, a preventative type thing too. Maybe it's not as bad as we know. Right.
But I think I agree with you. So
game where we can take that flexibility and sit one of them because it is toward the bottom of the league and we should be able to be able to do that.
Yeah. This is one of those ones where the first 20 minutes are going to be key to get some kind of result. Cause I think once you put Cologne under pressure, they're not going to fold. That's not the way they are, but it is going to put, they just can't do anything. That's going to open up things. And I think we're both on the same page with about 3 goals at this point. So got to come out strong, got to come out fast at that start, see if we can get the results there. And then it'll be nice because like you said, the schedule is just working in our favor. We open up with Mainz. We open up with Darmstadt. We open up with Cologne. We've opened up with 3 of the bottom clubs in the Bundesliga after the first couple of weeks. And this has really given us an opportunity to get our guys back from Asia, back from Africa, and integrate them back into the squad and get us ready really for, I mean, March, but then especially April when hopefully we've separated ourselves and we're playing not just for 4-5, but 3-4 maybe at that point. And
yeah,
the way Bayern looks, yikes, 2-3?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect to see the result today when you know, popped on, look at my phone while we're recording here to see where Bayern's at. That's completely unexpected against Bochum. But hey, it just goes to show that the teams are top. All of them are struggling, it seems, besides Leverkusen with some of the lower teams. So
yep.
I would absolutely love to see us fighting for second instead if we keep consistency up. But I know there's going to be some ups and downs. You know, you can't be perfect. I mean, we know that's not going to happen, right? We're going to be talking about something frustrating at some point that's happening. You know, a slip match or something like that or something that should have went a different way.
Yeah.
But it's becoming more of a one team's opportunity to lose the Bundesliga rather than two teams fighting for the Bundesliga. Yeah. And if you'd have told me that was going to be not Bayern, I would have thought you were crazy, but it's not Bayern's opportunity to win it anymore. Leverkusen stays consistent. It's theirs. I mean, they're more than one game clear, right, at this point. So
yeah,
they have it in their own points. They're two games clear. They have plenty of opportunity now to, you know, drop a couple of games and still stay where they are with where they're at.
It's a crazy, crazy time to be alive. Let's end on this one. So we both are predicting a big win for Stuttgart, 3-1 or 3-0 for the good guys here. Final thoughts, David, friend of the show, writes in, so I'm heading to Disney this week. Sorry about that, Dave. It was planning on repping Stuttgart around the Epcot Center. Again, sorry, Dave. Should I go with the black Endo kit, the striped red and black Dinos Mavropanos kit, or the 2021 Silas Brewstring home kit? I would think going to Florida in anything but white, because it's so hot down there, would be a bad idea. But it's going to be February, March when he goes down. So what kind of attire advice are you going to give Dave?
If you're going down to Epcot, you're walking around the international area there. I'm repping Endo and the black. Mm-hmm. You got the Japanese tie-in to, you know, a Japanese national team player. I know Mavropanos plays for Greece as well, but I don't know if he's quite as well known. And there's just something about Endo. My only question is he going to Disney for one day?
Oh, David.
If he's going for more than one day, why not just wear them all three in a row? I mean, maybe you're only spending one day at Epcot. I get it. But you can rep Faf Bay 3 days in a row. No one's going to bother you about that except for maybe your family.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen to us, guys who can't even afford the $40 Zoom upgrade to record at one session. Give you advice on your vacation expenses right there. So, there you go.
Hey, jerseys tend to breathe. They're comfortable no matter what the color and the heat, right? They're meant to be worn and warm in.
I would go with the black one because black makes you slimmer. And with my current body shape, I think the red and black one though has the collar. I like the collar because it's a bit of a formal look. So I don't think you can, Dave, there's no, just like Stuttgart nowadays, there's no losing. It's all winning.
You can win in multiple ways by wearing three Stuttgart jerseys 3 days in a row at Disney.
You could be like Beyonce and do an outfit change midway through Epcot.
They usually pack down pretty slim, too. They're not thick material, so they'll all fit in the bag.
It is a small world after all, Dave. It's a small world after all. All right, Rob. Hey, thanks so much for jumping on for your third episode, your hat trick, if you will, on the podcast. Appreciate it. You will go out there and enjoy your broom ball, as they call it in Wisconsin. And you hopefully we'll talk to you again after another big VFB weekend. Thanks a lot, man.
Looking forward to it.
Most of the Stuttgart fans are going to be tucking into the Mauertaschen with glee tonight. If you're wondering what a Mauertasche is, it's a culinary speciality of this region. Southwestern German dumpling. And if you're not a fan of Mauertaschen, then always look for Spätzle, which is the southwestern German variety of pasta. I must confess to being a bit more of a Spätzle man myself. But do give the Mauertasche a try if you come here.